Music Business Unlocked, a podcast for your music business by Creating Vision. MBOL Show.
Hey there, mate. How are you doing?
I'm good.
So good to see you. How have you been keeping?
Well, I'm good, definitely. Okay, so I'm gonna take people back way back, okay? I can't remember where I was. I think I was in Camden and you came to visit me. I think I was in a basement.
I remember that meeting well.
Yeah, I think I was in a basement and you were kind of like, look, you know what, starting a company. And I'm just trying to think when that was, maybe 2004, 2005, around there?
It was actually, I was actually still working at Universal at that time. So I'd had the idea then, yeah. But I didn't really officially start it until, I think, 2006, 2007.
Oh, okay. So... Yeah. There I am, you know, we're chatting and there's this bubbly guy's come to meet me and I'm like, yeah, chatting away and he leaves and I'm thinking, yeah, he's this one here. This, people, is Hiten Baradia. Hiten by name, hits by nature. And, you know...
It took a while to get there.
Listen, the thing was, it was always going to come.
Yeah.
It was always going to come. It's a matter of time. Anyway, so Hiten Baradia is a publisher and the name of his company is phrased differently, okay? Hiten is a publisher. Now, we'll take you through exactly what publishing is later, but just take it that it deals with songs. That is what publishing is about. That's what it deals with, etc., okay? Hiten is what you call, as far as I'm concerned, like proper publisher. As in, you join his ranks, and when you join his ranks, he puts you to work. And he's constantly looking out and looking out and looking out and looking out. And before long, you're bound to eventually end up, you know, backing the right project. Now, Hiten, take us through those early years, because obviously it wasn't always so. Yeah.
No, it wasn't always fun. I mean, you know, when you start a publishing company from zero track record with no experience in publishing yourself, you know, no one really takes you seriously, and it's kind of building up that credibility, which is the hardest part, because you know, you need A&Rs and publishers and managers and songwriters to take meetings with you. And when they don't, it kind of makes everything you do much slower, much slower. So, you know, like looking back, I was very enthusiastic when I started Phrase Differently. Before that, I was an A&R at Universal and I was lucky enough to A&R a song which made a global brand out of an artist, one song.
Song was that?
It was a song called Bailamos, and it was the first English language crossover hit that Enrique Iglesias had.
Right.
So he was a big artist in Latin America and Spain and Portugal before that. But until that song happened, no one really knew about him in the UK, in Europe, in the US, but literally, I kid you not, overnight, he became a global sensation. And it just showed me how powerful songs can be in terms of lifting artists from one place to another very, very quickly. And also actually the opposite, you know what, you pick the wrong song, you release the wrong song, and your currency loses its value. So it just really showed me how powerful songs were, and that they were actually, without songs, there was no business. you know, there's no artists releasing songs, there's no record labels. And I wanted to be working with songwriters to help them develop and to help them deliver the right songs that could potentially be these songs that are global hits, turning artists into brands.
But then let's take a stop too, because you also are a songwriter.
I am, yeah, I am. Yeah, I mean, it really, really helps. I mean, you understand the struggles that songwriters go through.
Come
on.
You know,
I think it's one of the only jobs where you actually work 365 days a year, and actually you're not entitled to earn a penny.
Zero.
You only start earning pennies, and literally pennies, when the song's released,
yeah,
and depending on how well the song does.
Yeah.
Let's take people through it.
There's going to be some people that are artists that talk about publishing, but they actually don't know what it actually is. Break down what publishing is.
So essentially, I mean, I always say that if you hear a song on the radio, there are essentially two sets of rights. There's the master rights, which the record companies own. That's the master recording, the actual physical recording. And then there's the lyrics, the melody, the music, which is actually the intellectual property, which is owned by a music publisher.
Yeah.
So that's essentially what publishing is. Publishing is publishers identify and sign and develop and then help to find opportunities for songwriters. Whether it's placing their songs with artists or whether it's putting them into writing sessions.
Right. Let's be real now. There are different sorts of publishing companies. Just like there's different sorts of songs, there are different sorts of publishing company. You know, you've got a publishing company, a major publishing company that might be much more of something. It begins to blow up on online. And there are kind of like a top three, top four publishers at that kind of level that will come in and essentially they're like hawks. Smaller publishers are almost like mammals, small mammals on the ground. And a large hawk sometimes can just come in, swoop, and just pay that money. Put down a huge check, an eye-watering amount in front of the artist. Now, the artist has then got the choice, because they could have been in chats with a smaller publisher. Has that scenario happened to you?
I mean, it happens time and time again. You know, the minute that we're interested in a writer, you know, the lawyers, just by nature, they want to create a marketplace where there are more people who are aware of that particular writer.
Yeah.
And that's fair enough. You know, that's fine. But you know, it's very difficult to compete with those very, very high advances that are given by majors. I mean, you know, I compare it to like a big fishing boat that has a huge net and, you know, catches 100 fish and can only cook or sell two of them. We're there with our little fishing rod, you know, catching some fish and then going, I don't think we can really help you. Why don't you swim along to someone who can? Or, you know what, we can help you. But like, we're very, very specific about who we sign. It, you know, because we get our hands dirty, we really get involved in developing. You know, if we look at advances, everyone immediately thinks of financial advances.
Yeah.
But people don't understand the advance of belief, the advance of time, the advance of development.
Talk the truth, man. Tell them.
So essentially, I mean, you know, what we're independent. We can't give the same level of advances as a Sony or a Warner or a BMG or whoever, Universal. But, you know, usually because we work so hard and we create so many opportunities, and I've got an amazing A&R team. Of Dan, who's our head of A&R, Dan Edu, Claudia Piazza, A&R manager, and Henry Sampson, who's just joined, amazing A&R manager as well. We create time and time again opportunity after opportunity after opportunity.
Yeah.
And we always say when we're signing people that actually, you know, if you're getting a check, a huge check from a major, we will probably earn you that money in terms of real royalties that if you have earned rather than an advance. Yeah. An advance is simply money that they you've think you're going to earn. You have to pay back. By hook or by crook, you have to pay it back. So, I mean, it's a really tough sell because eyes are turned very quickly. As soon as, you know, the zeros are added onto that checkbook, but then you kind of realize who you're getting into bed with. And like, I think the major publishers do an amazing job.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, the thing. But that, well, you have to understand the model. You have to understand who you're getting into bed with. You know, with a major, you know, it's not their fault. There are some great people who work there and I really admire them. But, you know, the ratio of writers that they have to, you know, the number of A&Rs actually working that roster is so high that it's really difficult for anyone to get any attention. So, so you know, you're kind of, yes, you've got a huge check, but you're left to fend for yourself.
Totally. Totally. And look, some writers are like, do you know what? That's fine. Give me the money because I'm creating and generating my own heat anyway. And the type of music that I'm part of, actually, maybe you guys don't know about. But and they just want to do it themselves and set up their own systems and just get going. You know what I mean? There are some people that that's what they like. But then there are others, you know, that are going in. And we see this time and time again, that go in, you know, an A&R for a publisher is getting pressure from up above to land that deal. All sorts of promises get made, and then sometimes they don't get fulfilled, as in, you know, the, as we say, the work that has to go on, because it's a lot of work.
I don't think people realize how much work it takes from signing a writer to actually getting your first cut up on the board. You know, the amount of other publishers you have to talk to, writers, to try and, you know, get them to have a session, to accept a session with your writer who you've just signed, who you really believe in, and you're selling them in on enthusiasm alone, you know. So it's really, really hard, and it's a process.
Yeah.
But as soon as they start getting those cuts, then the magic really starts to happen, because, you know, one of, you know, these cuts open up another 5-10 opportunities.
And okay, so talking of that, talking of cuts, Hitton, talk them through some of the hits that, phrased differently, your company has been involved in. Tell them. Let's start.
You know, I've got such a bad memory. I'm going to say I have no idea, but let's see. So Calvin Harris and Disciples, How Deep Is Your Love?
Stop right there.
That was huge for us. That was huge.
Say it again.
Calvin Harris and Disciples, How Deep Is Your Love?
A global hit. Let's
That was global. That was
global.
You know what? When Rihanna starts covering the song in her live concert, you know you've kind of done well.
And people, by the way, when Rihanna covers the song in her concert, the original writers are getting paid every time she
they
sings
certainly
it.
Are.
Understand? Okay. All right. Let's keep it rolling.
So Kara and Megan Cotone. You had Up by Olly Murs and Demi Lovato, Jax Jones and Ella Henderson, This Is Real, Sigala, Wish You Well, Little Mix, Move, Little Mix, Salute, Kygo, Stargazing, that's Justin Gesso. Just like they keep coming. I mean, there's so many, like I can't remember them, to be honest. But I'm so proud of our writers, because like literally, like 95% of them started with nothing, no cuts, zero track record, and they
let's take people, this is the bit that people have to understand, that this is proper A&R at source.
But you know what, Kwame, it's not just about writing skills, you know, that's a given.
You have to have
those basic songwriter skills that, you know, when you listen to someone's songs, you kind of, even if there's not a hit, whatever that is in there that you feel is a hit, you feel that there is something in there that shows that they can write songs, that they have the potential. But what's equally as important to us is their personality. How driven are they? How much do they want it? You know, because as a songwriter, you know, and all the songwriters out there listening will so identify with this, but good enough. No one's cutting my songs. No one wants to work with me. Am I ever going to make it? Did I make the right decision? It's really important that, you know, you have a real confidence in yourself. And, you know, a lot of the writers, I mean, most of the writers that we signed have that, and they are real personalities. They don't give up easily. They can take constructive criticism, which is all about development, you know. There's so many songs that they send in, you know, that aren't good enough. Sometimes they're not even good enough to be rewritten. You just like put them aside and you start again.
Those are the ones they go in, not in the C drawer, but the D drawer.
Yeah, but you know what, Kwame? Those songs are super necessary to write.
Absolutely.
You know, it's almost like you've got these great songs and ideas in you, but you have to get these other ideas out as quickly as possible so you can get to these great ideas, the magic ideas, as quickly as possible. So, you know, like, I love it when writers write those shit songs, because it just gets another bad song out the way, because I'm expecting the next one to be something super special.
Yeah. So Mr. Billy Rubin asked, how many songs do those writers write per year?
I'd say about on average, 3 to 4 a week.
Listen, I know there's a bunch of people out there going, what? 3 to 4 a week? Yeah, 3 to 4, you heard him.
And actually, it doesn't actually sound like a lot, because as a writer, you think you'd be in writing sessions every day. But we kind of discourage our writers to work every day, especially the top liners, because, you know, to come up with an outstanding, game-changing concept, idea, song idea, every day, it's very difficult. You have to go out there and live life, have experiences, bring them back into the writing room. So, you know, 3 to 4 times a week is good and doable. So that's like, I don't know, like 200 songs or so.
Let's be real. Come on now. Let's be real. It's like that's 200-300 songs, 250 odd songs, maybe more. Okay, so we've got Amaryllis asking, what qualities do you look for when you sign a writer?
Well, I like to listen to their body of work, and there has to be a song in there that makes me say, oh my God, that's amazing. You know, it might not be something that's even cuttable and releasable, but an idea that they're trying to put across, a turn of phrase, a melody, just yeah. Something that kind of hooks me and goes, wow, if they can come up with that, if they're working with the right people again and again and getting better and learning, what would they be able to come up with within 6 months' time? Yeah. So it's really something that kind of musically engages us and makes us excited. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's the same with not just me, all of our A&Rs. I mean, if they want to sign something, they literally have to get up onto the table, jump up and down, and say, I will, this is going to work. I promise this is going to work. I believe in it. And then you let them develop it.
Yeah. Okay, so 10K Mega says, how do I pitch a song or idea to an artist? Good question.
You know what? It's a tough one, really. It depends. If you know who you want to sing that song, say it's a certain artist, say it's, I don't know, Ollie Merz or James Arthur, then I would try and find out who manages that artist. I would try and find out who the record label is and find out who the A&R is. I'd basically try and find out who the lawyer is. Just any way to get through to that artist would be the best way. You try, if you can't get through the front door, you have to jump through the window, down the chimney, in the back door, you know. Anyway. You just wait until someone turns up. But, like, yeah, I mean, it's really difficult to find those names some of the time. But, you know, like, most publishers are amazing. They know who's who in the industry, who looks after who, what they're looking for at any one time. You know, like artists are recording songs all the time. You know, if you're going in to see an A&R or a manager, like I would say that the simple question to ask first is, what have you got? What are you missing? Because actually it's not just about playing them a song that you think, you know, it's about trying to fulfill a need.
Totally,
you
know, yeah.
As publishers, we offer services here and, you know, it's about, if we can give them the right song, something that they're missing, then they will come back to us. You know, that's the thing.
Okay, here's another question. This is from Miss Defiance. How many songs do you need under your belt before approaching a publisher?
Well, I think that, you know, just judging by my own experience, you know, I remember the first 10 songs that I wrote were awful. Were awful. I'm embarrassed. I have recordings of some of them somewhere, and like I can't even bring myself to listen to them.
And but let's like, be real, at the time, you probably thought they were the bee's nuts.
Well, I thought, you know, like I think even nowadays, like when I'm writing songs, the minute after I've written it, I think, wow, this could be something really special. 2 days later, a week later, I'm like, allow it. Forget about it. This is not even worth wasting time over. Like I literally, before I started writing songs that I thought were good enough, and people started reacting to, it was probably around 100 songs or so. Because you learn something. Every song you write, you learn something. Every songwriter you write with, you learn something from them.
It's a funny thing you say, that magic number.
Yeah.
A young lady came to visit me and she said to me, she was crying and she said, listen, and she was very, very teary. And we were in an office. And she said, honestly, what do you reckon? And I said, you're not cut out for this job. And she was like, I know. I said, what is it that you really want to do? She said, I want to sing. I said, okay. She goes, give me some advice. Now, I won't tell you all of it. I'll tell you one piece of advice I gave her. I said, go away and write 100 songs. And she went, 100? I said, yeah, 100 songs. I said, because there's a process. Your first 30, you'll think, your next 30, you'll be like, and by the time you're on your last, the last sort of 40, what will happen is you'll be more open to work with like other people, etc. So I said, so there's a process. Go away, write 100 songs. Jez Glynn went away and wrote 100.
Oh, amazing. Anyway, amazing.
So let's keep it moving.
But it's that, hold on, just quickly on that point, it's that 10,000 hours principle, isn't it? It's like, if you really want to become good at something, you spend 10,000 hours doing it, and then you become competent. And then you still need your brakes. You still need to break the rules. You still need to be clever about what you're doing.
And this is the thing. It's like, you've said it's not just, you know, it's not just songwriting. It's not just this. It's not. The thing is, there's a whole list of qualities. You know, it's all very well. You know, you could be a great songwriter. You know, you might. But you know what? If you've walked into a room where there's a potential chance and you've been an asshole straight away off the bat, maybe you're not going to get that break. You know,
there's Ben's brother, who's a good friend of mine, Jamie Hartman, who's just said 30,000 hours. Like, he's actually a writer that I really, really look up to and admire. There are writers that are able to express concepts in a way that make you go, wow, did you just say that? And you just want to go back and listen to it again. That's Jamie Hartman. That's Ben's brother over there. One of the best writers in the world.
Big plugs going on all over the place. Yeah. So Ben's brother, there we go. So, wow, we're already over time. Firstly, we thank you from the bottom of our socks and heart.
No, thank you.
Came on. We would ask, of course, that you come back on again, because I can see already the questions have started to fly in, which is classic. But it's fine, because we count this as the advert for the next time that you come on.
Music Business Unlocked, a podcast for your music business by Creating Vision. Help show.